Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
On today's program, I'll explain why I'm so mad at the New York Times. You can cancel my subscription. I'll discuss why colleges shouldn't have safe areas for people whose candidates don't get elected. I'll talk about why Colin Kaepernick is a hypocrite. And I'll tell you how to get great Google reviews in 3 steps and how to make Small Business Saturday a success for your business. It's Thursday, November 17th, 2016, and I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business.
Taking care of business every day. Taking care of business.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, and this program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. But as always, we get started first with a check of the weather. It's currently 55 degrees in Flemington at 12:06, and forecast shows that today it'll be partly to mostly sunny with a high of 62 degrees and a low of 33. For tomorrow, it'll be mild with plenty of sunshine and a high of 66 and a low of 33. Saturday, we're going to have sun giving way to clouds and rain late with a high of 64 degrees and a low of 36. And for Sunday, it'll be cloudy with showers throughout the day and cooler with a high of 48 degrees and a low of 30. current check of the financial market shows the Dow is currently up 14.07 to 18,882.21. The NASDAQ is up 29.96 to 5324.54. S&P 500 is up 8.78 to 2185.72. Oil is up 21 cents to $45.78 per barrel. And gold is up $1.60 to $1,225.50 an ounce. Facebook viewers, you are up to date. Now listen to the rest of the program on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. All right. Time to get another episode or another edition of Taking Care of Business out of the way. Here we are, Thursday, November 17th, 2016. And as always, so glad you could join us for another edition of Taking Care of Business. A couple of technical glitches here to begin the show, but we are back on the air now. So glad you could join me. The show is called Taking Care of Business, and that's exactly what we're going to do. One of the things that bothered me over the course of the last week, and, you know, we've now gone through the election. It was a long year and a half, but we've finally gotten through the election, and we have a president-elect in Donald Trump. Whether you like it or not, that is the 45th, or that will be the 45th president in Donald Trump. Protests all over the country. Protests in major cities, protests on college university campuses, protests in high schools with sit-ins and walkouts and things like that. And unfortunately, there's nothing that anybody can do to change the outcome. And there are some people that are holding out hope that the Electoral College would vote for Hillary Clinton on December 19th and overturn the election results. But that has never happened, and I don't think that it will at this point. If you think you have protests now, let them make that move and watch what happens. I think you'd start a civil war in this country if that were actually to happen. So at some point, you know, when you talk about the stages of grief, the folks who are doing all the protesting at some point will probably have to get to that stage of acceptance. And, you know, so I'm not upset with them. I get it. You have the right to vote. You have the right to assemble and protest. There was an interesting protest the other night where there were 121 people arrested. 70% of them said they didn't even vote in the election. Now, it's okay if you don't vote for a president or for a particular candidate. Let's say you don't want to vote for a state senator or mayor or something. I don't mind that, but at least exercise your right to have at least gone, registered, and voted. Even if you go in, pull the lever, and don't pick anything. I don't care if you don't even vote for the questions on the ballot. At least you went through the process. A lot of people, history professors, my parents, have often said that if you don't vote, then you can't complain because you had an opportunity to make change and you chose not to do it. Now, today I want to talk about three people that had an interesting and profound effect on my life. Back in the day, when I went to college at Salem College in West Virginia, I was a broadcasting major. I wanted to work in radio and television, and I have over the years in different locales worked in radio and television. But there were three gentlemen there over the course of my 4 years that taught me how to be a broadcaster. They were Mark Mills, Brad Nason, and Al Gruley. These were my three professors over the course of the 4 years. And the one thing that they always told me was, you can't become the story. You have to remain impartial. You have to remain objective and just report the facts. And this year, and even the both the first and second time that President Obama was elected, you saw the media with a distinct slant, you know, trying to get that candidate elected. And this year we saw it hell-bent from just about every media outlet, leaning one way or another. They're either leaning for Donald Trump, and most notably Fox News, or they're leaning for Hillary Clinton, most notably CNN. But what we found was that it was blinding them, if you will, from being able to report the news as it should be reported, just based on the facts. So in the preview of the show, I said I was a little pissed off at the New York Times, and I am, because they came out and admitted that they did wrong. The New York Times publisher is now vowing to rededicate the paper to reporting honestly. I believe the paper's been around for over 120 years, and for them to have to make a statement like that, this is the benchmark, this is the pillar, if you will, of news agencies. Everybody used to look to the New York Times as both cutting edge, leading edge, and for their accuracy in reporting. But to say that now they're going to, quote, rededicate themselves to reporting honestly, that just throws away everything I ever learned in college. So the publisher of the New York Times penned a letter to readers last Friday promising that the paper would, quote, reflect on its coverage of this year's election while rededicating itself to reporting on America and the world honestly. Arthur Rose Sulzberger Jr., the paper's embattled publisher, appealed to Times readers for their continued support. We cannot deliver the independent, original journalism for which we are known without the loyalty of our subscribers. And to be honest, subscriptions have fallen off precipitously. So his letter reads, to our readers, when the biggest political story of the year reached a dramatic and unexpected climax last Tuesday night, our newsroom turned on a dime and did what it has done for nearly 2 years, cover the 2016 election with agility and creativity. After such an erratic and unpredictable election, there are inevitable questions. Did Donald Trump's sheer unconventionality lead us and other news outlets to underestimate his support among American voters? What forces and strains in America drove this divisive election and the outcome? Most important, how will a president who remains a largely enigmatic figure actually govern when he takes office? As we reflect on this week's momentous result and the months of reporting and polling that preceded it, we aim to rededicate ourselves to the fundamental mission of Times journalism, that is to report America and the world honestly, without fear or favor, striving always to understand and reflect all political perspectives, life experiences in the stories that we bring to you. It is also to hold power to account, impartially and unflinchingly. We believe we reported on both candidates fairly during the presidential campaign. You can rely on the New York Times to bring the same fairness, the same level of scrutiny, the same independence to our coverage of the new president and his team. We cannot deliver the independent, original journalism for which we are known without the loyalty of our subscribers. We want to take this opportunity on behalf of all Times journalists to thank you for your loyalty. And it's signed by Arthur Sulzberger, the publisher, and Dean Baquette, who's the executive editor. Now, the terms that they use, that they want to report on America and the world honestly, without fear or, and underline this next word, favor, it kind of caught me by surprise because it was an admission that that's exactly what they had done. New York Post columnist and former Times reporter Michael Goodwin wrote, because it, meaning the New York Times, demonized Trump from start to finish, it failed to realize that he was onto something. And because the paper decided that Trump supporters were a rabble of racist rednecks and homophobes, it didn't have a clue about what was happening in the lives of the Americans who elect the new president. Sulzberger's letter was released after the paper's public editor Liz Spade took the paper to task for its election coverage. She pointed out how its polling feature, Upshot, gave Hillary Clinton an 84% chance as voters went to the polls. She compared stories that the paper ran about President-elect Donald Trump and Clinton, where the paper made Clinton look functional and organized and the Trump campaign discombobulated. Spade wrote, "Readers are sending letters of complaint at a rapid rate. Here's one that summed up the feeling succinctly from Kathleen Casey of Houston. Now that the world has been upended, and you are all, to a person, in a state of surprise and shock, you may want to consider whether you should change your focus from telling the reader what and how to think, and instead devote yourselves to finding out what the reader and non-readers actually think." She wrote about another reader who asked the paper should focus on the electorate instead of pushing the limited agenda of your editors. "Please come down from your New York City skyscraper and join the rest of us." Sulzberger, who insisted that the paper covered both candidates fairly, also sent a note to staffers on Friday reminding the newsroom to give the news impartially, without fear or favor. "But we also approach the incoming Trump administration without bias," he said. So, again, the fact that the major newspaper in this country has had to come out and say these things and remind its editors and remind its reporters to be fair and not show favor just speaks volumes to how much the media was trying to manipulate this election. All I want in coverage, whether I'm the one reporting it or whether I'm the one receiving it, are the facts. You give me the facts. You give anybody the facts. You give Lewis Brown the facts, and he will disseminate them in the way that he wants to or in the way that he thinks is objective. It doesn't matter who you are. Just give me the facts, and I will make up my mind from there. But don't try to make up my mind for me. So, interesting take coming out of the New York Times, and I think there's other media outlets who are all looking at themselves right now and saying, how did we get this so wrong, and what do we do to make it right? You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about protesters, college safe spaces, and Colin Kaepernick. We'll be right back.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big Z of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Frank Peluso, Frank Peluso Photography, and I belong to the Chamber because it works.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business. Working overtime.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me today. My name is Jim Gannot, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. And again, glad that you could join us for another edition of Taking Care of Business. Let's talk now for a moment about, and I'm hoping that after this week I'm done with election coverage and all this other stuff that's been happening. Obviously, the Trump team is now huddled in Trump Tower, selecting their cabinet, vetting candidates and things like that. And an interesting topic, as we talked before the break about the media bending the truth, so to speak, on election coverage, is that they're all wondering what's taking so long. Why hasn't Trump come out and named his cabinet yet? An interesting slate that was shown this morning on a lot of the news channels was that most presidents take almost a month before they announce their first appointments. Bill Clinton took 30 days to announce his first. The only person who really came out with the first two was George W. Bush. Every president since Kennedy has taken up to 3 to 4 weeks to start naming cabinet posts. And again, it's the vetting process and making sure that the people are interested in the position. Now we have a new phenomenon, the protests and the college campus protests and the need for college safe spaces. And safe spaces have been coming in vogue in the last several years on campus because there's a lot of differences amongst the student population. Sometimes it's about race. If there was a space on campus, let's say, where blacks could go, if there's a place on campus where people are being picked on because of their sexual orientation or whether they're LGBT or if they're Muslim, I'm okay with that. As long as they have a place where they can go, they can study, they can talk amongst fellow students, and not so much, fix the problem. There isn't really a problem. But if they can go somewhere and feel comfortable amongst their peers, I'm all for that. A safe space on campus because your candidate lost? Well, that's where I'm going to pretty much draw the line. My son attends Rutgers University, so there's a big protest at Rutgers yesterday, and it did disrupt classes. It didn't disrupt any of his, but last week he had an exam due on Thursday. And all of a sudden, he shows up at our house, and I was like, what are you doing here? He goes, oh, the class was canceled. I said, why? He goes, well, the teacher was too upset about the presidential election results. At some point, I'm going to lose my mind because it doesn't matter whether your presidential candidate lost the election. It doesn't matter if your favorite baseball team lost the World Series or your favorite football team lost the Super Bowl. The next day, you have to wake up and you have to go do your job. Where are we at now when we just say, well, I'm just going to stop teaching because my candidate lost the election? How about I write a letter to the Rutgers University president and ask for my damn money back because I'm paying an exorbitant amount of money for my kid to go to school. I think it's $36,000, and he's there for one reason, to learn. And now the professors are saying, well, I can't teach because my candidate lost the election. Come on, folks, let's grow up. Now we have my buddy Colin Kaepernick. Now, I have said nothing all year about Colin Kaepernick and his protest to either kneel or sit during the national anthem. And I will continue to not get involved into that argument. He can do what he wants, and I think he's pretty much felt the repercussions from across the country, both from the media, from fans, from celebrities, etc. So that's not the point of this conversation. But he says he'll continue to make this stand until there's actual change in the way that blacks are treated. I completely agree. And if you want to go through 200 years of history of this country, you can say, yes, the blacks have been mistreated, and it is time for change. And we're not anywhere near where we need to be in race relations in this country. But he had a choice, and he had a chance to affect change. He could have voted for a candidate that might work better with the black community, whether on the national level, at the presidential level, on the state level, or on the local level. And instead, he didn't vote. He didn't even show up. And to me, that makes him one of the biggest hypocrites out there because he had that. Now, any way you look at it, one vote, Colin Kaepernick's vote, wasn't going to change anybody's election results. But he had a chance to at least make his feelings known, to make changes, and instead he decides to sit home. Nothing happens on the couch, guys. You have to get out. Could he have worked for one of the candidates and potentially swayed people to vote for them? Who knows? But, he chose to sit at home and do nothing. And I think that's probably one of the most hypocritical things that a person can do. If you're going to complain about this country but not get involved in the process, I have a real problem with that. So I need everybody out there to get back to school. I need everybody out there, go back to your jobs. And if you're taking part in these protests but you didn't even vote, shame on you. You really don't have much to stand on. I think Hillary Clinton said it best. I think President Obama said it best. I think Donald Trump said it best. And many people have said it best. At this time in our country, with about 63 days to Inauguration Day, we should all be working together to make this the best country that it can be. I'm not going to say make it great again, but I'm going to say to make it the best it could be. Come together. Let's hear what the differences are, and let's work to resolve them. Because, like it or not, January 20th, the 45th president will be inaugurated. And at that point, we all have to kind of not follow along, but we all have to support him so that his administration can do a good job. If we continue to say, not my president and all this stuff, there's a good chance that we lose a ton of respect on the international stage. So I'm not saying we all have to be lemmings and walk off the cliff, but at least let's work together in all issues, socioeconomic issues, race relations, crime, police, everything. Work together. And I've said this on this program for the last 2 years, with the rise of, you know, police shootings and backlash against the police, I think we've got to get all of our leaders, you know, whether it's based on the police leaders, political leaders, race leaders, we have to all start to get together, get to the table, and start talking about our differences so we understand what the police are coming up against before we just, you know, judge them. So hopefully we're going to get back to work pretty soon and then start functioning again as a country. So hopefully we'll be able to do that. Currently 12:25, you're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. So glad again that you can join me. Next week there will be no show. It'll be Thursday, and that means one thing. It will be Thanksgiving, and hopefully you will have a great Thanksgiving with your family, and as I always do with mine, enjoying great food, some great football, eating way too much, and falling asleep on the couch. That's pretty much next Thursday for me. So enjoy the break. Currently 12:26. I got an email question during the week, and it says, do you have any advice for dealing with an unreliable supplier? This came to me from a fellow store owner who was having trouble with one particular supplier and was to the point where, what do I do? So in business, having a reliable supplier is key to running a successful business. Doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a decorator, whether you're a trophy store, you have to have the goods and services in order to keep your business running, especially those that run a small shop and rely on outside resources to keep their business stocked to meet customer demand. Now, when a shop owner starts experiencing breakdowns in the chain, that logistics chain, because of issues with the supplier, well, this can cause headaches and the business for the business and their clients. Issues like late shipments, short shipments, items constantly out of stock, and generally unsatisfactory service can slow things down, including damage of product when it actually does arrive. So when is it time to shop elsewhere, and when is it worth switching suppliers over maintaining a long-term relationship? And I would say that in today's internet-based economy, the solution is to find a different source. And I would also caution you not to overlook the pre-existing relationship with your original supplier and to factor in any intangible services that they provide. It is 100% the responsibility of the supplier to remedy their problems like back orders, reduction in service levels, and other headaches. They have given you a reason to look elsewhere, and you should follow their cues. Just make sure that the new supplier can eliminate those issues and provide the service levels that you desire. Don't burn any bridges when leaving, as you never know when your previous supplier might change their ways or become the only source for a certain item that you need for your business to be successfully. You can quietly move on your way, and if they are a good company, they will notice and reach out to you and try to win you back. Now, in my industry, we have maybe 5 major suppliers. And at any given time, cyclically, one will have more problems than another. And typically what I will tell them is, I'll call them up. I say, look, guys, I'm going to put you in the penalty box. I'm not going to buy anything from you for 2 weeks. Straighten out what has to happen. I don't want short ships. I don't want missing material. I don't want the wrong material. Fix it on your end, and then I'll come back. And very often, they will bust their tail to make sure that my orders are getting done correctly. Work with them. Don't bash them. And like they said, don't, you know, necessarily burn that bridge on your way out, so that hopefully when they do right the ship, whatever made you want to do business with them in the first place, you can still do it again. And I think that works a little bit better. But a lot of times you don't have a lot of suppliers, so you really have to work with them and let them know what the impact is on your business. If you've lost a major account over this, let them know that, because they have to know that there is something tangible behind what's making you change your mind. All right, it's time for our 12:30 break. I'm going to try for the news. It wasn't working before. If it does, great. If not, we'll continue on with the program. But when we do come back, we're going to talk about how to get great Google reviews in three easy steps. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. And a brief check of the weather shows that for today it's going to be partly to mostly sunny and pleasant with a high of 62 degrees and a low of 33. For tomorrow it'll be mild with plenty of sunshine and a high of 66 and a low of 34. For Saturday we're going to have sun giving way to clouds and rain late with a high of 64 degrees and a low of 36. And for Sunday it will be cloudy with showers throughout the day and cooler with a high of 48 degrees and a low of 30. All right, so continuing on with the program, before the break, I mentioned that I had a story on how to get great Google reviews in three easy steps. Now, if you're not sure how to get positive reviews of your business on Google, this story is for you. Sometimes, all you have to do is ask a satisfied customer. Now, did you know that customers can review your business on Google? Now, these reviews show up on your Google My Business profile, in Google search results, and on Google Maps. Online reviews help improve your small business's online visibility, and they also serve an important marketing function. Reviews can convince potential customers who are in the, quote, research phase to purchase from your business, said David Mulqueen, who's the project manager for digital marketing agency Odd Dog Media. But how can you get customers to leave a great review? Well, here are three easy tactics. Start by asking your best customers. Try simply asking satisfied customers to leave a review on your Google My Business profile. This is a guaranteed way to build some momentum in getting more and more reviews on Google, advised Mulqueen. Number two, you want to make review requests part of every positive transaction. Maybe consider handing out a flyer with a link to your Google My Business page and a request for a review. And that comes from Jim Lassinger, who's the CEO of digital marketing field Deep Field. And number three, never pay for a positive review. Never pay someone to leave good reviews on Google, because that's a violation of Google's terms of service, and it's just plain unethical. If you're eager to increase the number of reviews, consider offering a small incentive for anyone who publishes and shows you a review. This might be a special coupon or other non-cash incentive. You want to offer this type of incentive for any reviewer, regardless of if the review is positive or not. And here's a bonus tip. Be sure to thank all customers willing to take the time to review your business. Their perspectives, both good and bad, will help improve your level of service. So there's a couple tips there on how to increase your positive reviews on Google My Business. And if you are a business owner and you haven't been looking at Google My Business, it's something that you should definitely take the time to do, because you want to make sure that the information there is accurate, and if there's anything out there that's negative, that you're addressing that both quickly and, more importantly, in a positive fashion. Well, coming up next Saturday, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday after Thanksgiving, is Small Business Saturday. Now, how can you make Small Business Saturday a success for your business? Now, as more people shop small for the holidays, just try to use some of these tips to market your business and create a memorable experience for your customers. Now, American Express founded Small Business Saturday in 2010 to help small businesses get more customers. Taking place the Saturday after Thanksgiving, the day after Black Friday, Small Business Saturday is a day to celebrate small businesses in your local community. The 7th anniversary will be held on November 26, 2016 this year, and the countdown is on for businesses to get prepared. If your small business is going to participate this year, it's time to start planning. Small Business Saturday is quickly becoming a holiday tradition of its own. By planning ahead, making the event memorable, wowing your customers, and providing good times all around, your business will be sure to reap the benefits. First, you need to prep your staff and premises. Do you have the manpower to handle the influx of traffic Small Business Saturday will bring through your door? You want to bulk up on your staffing schedule for the day with seasonal employees if necessary, but schedule veteran team members too. They're more prepared to answer customer questions and troubleshoot issues quickly. Number three, what have we said on the show for 5 years? Promote, promote, promote. You need to spread the word about your participation. Use all the tools at your disposal. Your social media channels, your website and event calendar, posters and flyers, in-store and around the neighborhood, and of course, word of mouth. Considering investing a small amount into promoted local search listings. And then finally, or more importantly, make it memorable. Host performances, hold a scavenger hunt, offer tasty samples. Make Small Business Saturday at your business a day to remember by making it an experience. The Small Business Saturday movement is gaining ground with small business owners and, more importantly, with supportive customers who like to shop local. With a little forethought and creativity, you can make it a memorable and successful day for your business. So are you participating in Small Business Saturday, or is this anything that you feel can help your business? If so, let me know. You can email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com. I'll try to promote it on our Facebook page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano, and so that others can take advantage of anything you're offering as well. Now, in business, of course, you know, one thing we all need, one thing we all like to have is money. And sometimes, if you're not making enough of it, you have to take out a loan, whether that's to start a business or to expand a business or anything else. Sometimes you have to go ahead and fill out a loan application. So here are three key steps to prepare for your loan application. Now, if you're ready to apply for a loan to grow your small business, it pays to be prepared before you fill out a single page of paperwork or step foot inside a bank. When it comes to securing a business loan, insufficient research can place needless roadblocks between you and your business goals. So here are three simple tips to help prepare your small business loan application and maximize your chance for loan approval and favorable interest rates. You want to make sure that your business credit score is in good shape. Your credit rating, both your personal and business credit scores, has a major impact on interest rates and loan approval. It's crucial, too. You have to know where you stand with the major credit bureaus. Check for and dispute any discrepancies or errors on your report. In the months leading up to your application, avoid other new loans or credit inquiries, for example, buying or leasing a new vehicle or a home. You want to pay all bills on time to avoid damaging your credit score, and you want to avoid using a large percentage of available credit card balances. Number two, prepare a business plan. A thoughtful business plan shows the bank or investors that you have considered and prepared for all potential risks and situations. It also educates lenders on the market need or opportunities in your area, your potential audience, and your long-term growth plans. Doing this legwork can help show the bank you're a low-risk investment. Crunch the numbers before someone else does to make sure that everything adds up. Number three, check your financial statements. Review your most recent profit and loss and cash flow statements so you know how much you need to borrow and how much you can pay back every month without affecting operations. Financial institutions may be able to help you nail down realistic and specific estimates, but you shouldn't ask for a loan without first being confident of at least a ballpark figure. While these documents are fairly standard in the loan process, required documentation varies by lender. Even if your preferred lender has less stringent requirements, these steps will provide you with a clear understanding of your business model, financial health, and the loan application process. So hopefully if you are looking to expand your business or start a business, you take those tips into consideration before working on a loan application. It's currently 12:39, and you're listening to Take Care of Business on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Jim Gano. Always glad to join you each week at this time. How about the folks, and I got a phone call on this the other day, where the person said to me, there's just not enough hours in the day. I don't know how I'm going to get it all done. I have too much on my plate. So here are five actionable steps to take when there is too much on your plate. So if you're buried under a pile of work, hopefully you can use some of these steps to regain some of the control. Maybe you're swamped with tasks trying to prepare for some upcoming time off, or maybe your daily workload is constantly so overwhelming you feel like you can never catch up. Either way, you're left looking cross-eyed at a to-do list that's miles long, wondering how you'll ever manage to get it all done. Now, I've been there before, too. Having way too much on your plate is a disheartening, frustrating, and stressful experience. But if you think your only options are to put your head down on your desk or start breathing into a paper bag, well, you've got another thing coming. So here are five actionable steps to take when you're feeling buried under your work. Number one, prioritize. Now, you knew the classic prioritization advice had to appear here somewhere, and when you're feeling overwhelmed, it's the very first thing you want to do. It's time to get those tasks into some sort of logical order so you can identify just where you should get started. When in doubt, I recommend a simple matrix concept. Just divide a square into four even sections and then label the left side of the boxes with urgent and not urgent, and the top side of the boxes with important and not important. Then fill in the boxes with the things you need to get done, placing tasks in the appropriate box where you think they will rank. This will allow you to quickly see where you need to begin, which, of course, is with those things ranked as both urgent and important. Number two, focus on the value. Chances are you have a few things that clutter up your workday, not because they're essential, but simply because you've just always done them. With each task you add to your to-do list, focus on what value completing it offers. Does that item really matter? What makes it important in the grand scheme of things? Doing this typically means that you can eliminate some to-dos altogether. And when in doubt, the items that fell into the non-urgent or non-important cube from the step listed on the top of the page can likely be dumped off your to-do list immediately. Number three, delegate what you can. So now you're left with the things that actually do need to get done on your list. But do they actually need to be done by you? Or is there someone else you could delegate them to? The tasks that fell into the urgent but not important section of your matrix can often be the perfect things to shift off your plate. Don't have anyone to delegate to? You don't need to chalk this step up as a total loss. Explore if there are any automated solutions you can use to take the manual labor out of those pesky, repetitive tasks that you complete day in and day out. Number four, you want to plan ahead and notify. You've done it. You're down to the nitty-gritty of what you need to get accomplished, but there's only one problem. This narrowed-down workload still seems like way too much. That means it's time to be proactive. Prioritize your priorities, as odd as they may sound, and determine if you're going to miss any deadlines. If so, let the relevant people know immediately. It's always better to give advanced warning on a delay than to frantically scramble into someone's inbox at the 11th hour without the work completed. And number five, just get started. All of the tips that I've already laid out are helpful, but there's no denying that they'll take some time, and time that you feel a little short on at the moment. Sometimes the best thing you can do for yourself is to drop all of the hacks, tips, and tricks and just start chipping away at that seemingly never-ending to-do list. No, it might not be the most strategic approach, but at least you'll be getting things done. Nobody likes feeling like they're piled under a suffocating amount of work. However, unfortunately, it's a situation we all often find ourselves in. So if you use these five steps to address that overwhelming workload, you're probably sure to tackle it with as much strategy and as little stress as possible. So there are some good tips there. And I've had to do that periodically over the last couple of months. You know, like what's urgent, what's pressing, what's due today kind of thing. And when you really start to prioritize your desk, all of a sudden, it doesn't seem like that big mound of paperwork. It's now it becomes small little piles. And just like this, with the urgent, important, not important, very quickly you realize, you know, wow, I got to the end of that pile. You know, and I have 4 more hours left in the day. So let's see what else I can tackle. So hopefully those tips will help you, and you'll be able to get yourself back on track quickly. It's currently 12:44. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, more Taking Care of Business. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a
You lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join us yet again as we get together this time every Thursday, except next week. Not going to get together next week, so you will be doing the rewind all weekend as that is Thanksgiving Day, and you should probably be spending time with your family and friends rather than with me at noon. Let's see now. There has been a lot of talk, and in fact, my son actually gave me a book today as an early Christmas present about email marketing, social media marketing, and although I'm very good at it, there's always things you can learn or new platforms coming out that you can institute for your business, so I don't want you to be intimidated by social media marketing. I think it's something that's a lot easier for people once you understand what it is you're trying to do and what it is you're trying to accomplish, and then just choosing the proper vehicle to make all of that happen. So if you want to boost your digital marketing, use this simple plan to connect with customers on the right social media platforms. The first is to pick the best platform for your business. Most small business owners know that social media is an important part of modern marketing strategy, and still, social media's many and ever-changing platforms can make the process feel overwhelming. So if you've been reluctant to dive into social media marketing for your small business, you can get started with a few simple steps. Number one, pick the best platform for your small business. And not all social media platforms are created equal. Some sites are more popular with certain age groups, types of media, or other features. The most important first step in your social media strategy is deciding which of these platforms are best for your business. You can't maintain an active account on every social media site. You want to select two or three platforms that you can devote your time to. Consider which sites your customers are likely to use, if you're trying to reach consumers or other businesses, and whether you prefer to tell your business's story with text, photos, or videos. Facebook, you can add photos, post live video updates like I do at the beginning of every show, or handle customer service via reviews and comments on the most popular social media site. For Instagram, you can share photos and short videos with your followers along with comments and hashtags on this growing platform. LinkedIn, you can build a company page, promote your brand, join like-minded groups of business owners, recruit and share expert advice on the professional network. Medium's oversized photo layouts and easy self-publishing dashboard encourages users to create and discuss longer articles. Periscope is a video streaming app that lets you watch live broadcasts or you can create your own. Pinterest is a platform that helps businesses reach new customers using images of your products or services, which users can then pin to their own boards for future inspiration. Snapchat is a method of sending quick messages, photos, or short video clips, all of which disappear after they're viewed on this favorite app for millennials. On Twitter, you can quickly share short text posts, photos, and videos with followers. You can retweet others' posts and use hashtags to follow trending topics on this newsy-type platform. You also want to listen and respond to followers. Now, once you pick the best platform to reach your audience, follow these best practices to engage with your customers. You want to follow the 80-20 rule. talk about your business just 20% of the time and other relevant topics, for instance, interesting articles about your local community or industry, the other 80%. You want to ask open-ended questions to encourage conversation and engagement from your followers. And you want to reply quickly and warmly to all inbound questions and comments. So there's a few tips on how to make social media work for you. It's not as hard as it seems, but sometimes you just have to dig in, and get it done. So hopefully those tips can help you as you attempt to make social media marketing part of your advertising or promotional platform. I am all over the map here today. Here we go. All right. So now we talked about social media marketing. Let's talk about Facebook, for instance, and do a little bit of a deeper dive here. So a lot of people start with a Facebook page for their business, but that's okay, but it's just a start. Right now, I would estimate that most of your Facebook marketing is only about 1% finished. Facebook's newsfeed is constantly changing. Recently, there was an announcement of yet another algorithm change that came as a small surprise, though perhaps an unwelcome one, to the small business owners who rely on Facebook for business to reach customers. Facebook's changes aren't meant to drive small business owners crazy trying to keep up. Iteration, a new version of software and developer lingo, is in the newsfeed's DNA. Facebook's newsfeed is, after all, tailored to the individual likes, dislikes, and media habits of its more than 1.6 billion, with a B, users. "We view our work as only 1% finished," wrote Adam Mosseri, the VP of Product Management for the newsfeed, in a recent Facebook blog. "If Facebook always has 90% more work to do on the newsfeed, that means your company does too, if you want to stay visible on the social media platform." Here's what you need to know about Facebook's latest tweaks and what they mean for your social media marketing. Facebook is getting personal. Facebook's latest evolution was engineered to make users feel they're getting more personalized stories in their daily newsfeed. Facebook does this by predicting which stories users will find most informative. The most informative stories are those that are, quote, "related to users' interests, engage people in broader discussions, and certain news about their users' worlds." That means informative stories could be anything from recipes to local issues and global current events, said Facebook. "It all depends on each user's interaction with the posts that appear and the stories they interact with on their newsfeed." Facebook combines their informative signal from each user with other factors, like a user's relationship with the person or company that posted an update. That's the extent of the guidance Facebook provided on the personally informative newsfeed tweak. Now, what does it mean for your business page? Facebook warns that some pages will see referral traffic increase, others will see traffic decrease, while most pages will see no big change to their visibility in the newsfeed. "Pages should continue to post stories that are relevant to their audiences," said Facebook. "So keep calm, stay focused on what matters to your customers, and use this as an opportunity to refresh your Facebook knowledge." Refresh your Facebook knowledge. Let's take the word knowledge out of there. How about your Facebook page? How often are you looking at the posts that you're making? How often are you posting on your Facebook page? Some businesses will do it up to 12 times per day. Others, just a few times a week. Others, once a week, sometimes once a month. If people keep coming back to your page and they see the same old thing, well, there's nothing new to report. Even if it's just posting a picture of a recent job completed, if you were a bridal dress store and a girl picked a dress, you could post it on the page and say, you know, "Susie just picked, you know, this dress. You know, we're so happy for Susie. Good luck on your wedding day." Maybe you don't do that if you're afraid that Susie's future husband may see the picture, but you get the idea. Like when we sometimes big projects for us, we'll take pictures of them and you'll see 1,000 trophies on a table, or you'll see an over the street banner hanging across Main Street. We want to show people that this is the type of stuff we do. So hopefully, you know, they'll engage with us down the road. And talking about engaging, there are three ways to stop being ignored on social media. Social media marketing takes time and effort. So if you take these simple steps to make sure your social media marketing pays off for your small business, hopefully it will result in more sales down the road. Now, social media is a huge opportunity for business, no denying that. But many time and cash-strapped small business owners also perceive it as a burden. Do all your social media marketing efforts result in little more than the sound of digital crickets chirping? If your small business is being ignored on social media, these three simple tips can help you get the right people to pay attention. You want to find your audience where they already spend time online. A professional service business may spend time and money posting all day to Facebook. But if your core audience of executives mainly engages on LinkedIn, you won't reach the right eyes. So spend your time using only those platforms where your target audience spends its time online. Not sure which platforms are best for your businesses? Ask your best customers about their favorite social media sites. Then do your research and see if it's something that you should be using for yours. You want to maintain a constant presence. Many businesses only post during short-term or seasonal campaigns, and then they go dark for weeks or months. And like any relationship, your social media followers need consistent attention to build loyalty. If you're short on time, consider scheduling a batch of posts in advance using Hootsuite or a similar tool that will broadcast to multiple platforms. Number three, stop selling and start engaging. Social media is about getting to know people. It's not about the hard sell. And while it's fine to share promotions and sales online, the bulk of your content should provide value for your customers rather than asking them for something. Join the online conversation by engaging with other social media users, replying to inbound questions, using popular hashtags, or creating polls and contests. And if you're ready to take your company's social media marketing to the next level, you can download a free ebook from Manta called Succeed with Social Media to learn successful strategies for your small business, and that's at manta.com. So hopefully you can find some tips there. One more story before we close it out today, and that's how to turn your tiny marketing budget into Facebook gold. And you can see we're kind of heavy on social promotion, and at this time of the year, it's key. You've got Thanksgiving next week, followed by Black Friday, Shop Small Saturday, Cyber Monday. Now's the time. Get out there now, today, tomorrow, and start putting your name out there so people remember you when it comes time to open their wallets. So how do you turn your tiny marketing budget into Facebook gold? To get the maximum returns from even the smallest digital marketing budget, use Facebook ads for your small business. Facebook ads are a great way for your small business to connect with your target customers and motivate them to make a purchase. But what if you don't have much money to spend on advertising? Can you still generate big results on Facebook without a big budget? And the answer is a resounding yes. Follow these steps to maximize the impact your social media marketing budget can have and turn those advertising dollars into Facebook gold. Number one, identify specific and realistic goals. Don't waste your time or money during your social media ad campaigns figuring out who you want to reach or what you're trying to accomplish. Before you spend a dime, decide on a specific goal. You might be trying to publicize an event or trying to get more clicks to your website. Set your goal and Facebook will guide you through the process of choosing the right type of ad to accomplish it. You can set a daily campaign or a daily spending limit to ensure that you won't go over your budget. You also want to get smart about targeting. Business owners eager to boost their results often fall prey to a rookie Facebook ads pitfall, targeting an ad too broadly. For instance, if you're a department store promoting a sale on baby clothes, putting your ad in front of teens or seniors won't have the same impact as targeting women ages 25 to 35 who are more likely to make those purchases. Similarly, it's important to target your specific geographic area if you have a brick-and-mortar location. You want to monitor and tweak campaigns based on Facebook insights. Now, if you set a Facebook ads campaign and forget about it, you won't be able to make course corrections or glean valuable insights from the data as you go. So you want to closely monitor the audience engagement numbers that Facebook provides. These measurements should determine how to tweak your current and future campaigns if certain demographics or posting times under or overperform. So hopefully something that you can take a look at today, Facebook ads, to see if you can get the most out of your business and Facebook advertising. In sports, in NASCAR, the championship round field is set as Joey Logano won last week's Can-Am 500 at Phoenix. Logano joins Jimmy Johnson, Carl Edwards, and Kyle Busch as the four drivers that will battle it out this weekend in Miami for the Ford EcoBoost 400 in the best finisher takes all format in the final race of the season in the chase for the Sprint Cup. The green flag drops at 3:15 p.m., and if your favorite driver doesn't win, please don't protest and leave work and stage sit-ins. It happens. Get over it. In NCAA football, it heads into Week 12, and the AP Top 10 got a huge shakeup after last week's where the numbers 2, 3, 4, 8th, and 9th ranked teams all lost. So this week, the Top 10 looks like this. Alabama still leads the poll in the number one spot, followed by Ohio State, Louisville, Michigan, and Clemson. Wisconsin, Washington, Oklahoma, Penn State, and West Virginia round out the Top 10. The top four teams in the playoffs are Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and Clemson. NFL Week 11 kicks off tonight with the New Orleans Saints facing the Carolina Panthers. Game time is 8:25 p.m. And congratulations to the Bridgewater Raritan Panthers football team as they beat Columbia last week to advance to the second round of the state playoffs tomorrow night at Bazelon Field in Bridgewater. Remember, no show next week. And as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today. And I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook on our new page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. I'm Jim Gano. And I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day.